Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Stand, Episode 8. The Stand is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps, the podcast called Post Show Recaps. My name is Jessica Lease, and we have a lot to break down because it seems like the writers of this series just took all of the interesting action and crammed it into this one single episode as if they are filling a former killing field full of water with people chained to the bottom. And I'm really excited to talk about everything that has happened here, even though I'm really terrible at these kinds of metaphors. So with me here to break it all down for you is the man who definitely knows how pendulums work, Rob Sesternino.
Yes, yes. The hand of God has brought me here.
Well, it's not really a hand so much as like a Van de Graaff generator.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Jess, what a action-packed episode of The Stand.
This was a lot. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am very curious. I know you have been really high on the recent episodes of The Stand. Has that trend continued?
So, yeah, we were talking about this with Mario the other day, and he was sort of like saying like, you guys hate this. And it's like I really feel like that the show, I think that, you know, The first, I look at this in like almost like in three parts where like the beginning I thought was interesting. I thought it lagged a little bit in the middle, like those couple episodes where we were stuck in Boulder and we had like the whole like sort of like Three's Company episode dinner between where Harold was like is he catching on to Franny? Is she catching on to him? You know, Larry creeping around. There was Larry in Three's Company also. And then, but I think that it's been, pretty action. I mean, this was wild, this last episode. Like, there's a lot to unpack here, but I feel like that definitely was interesting.
Yeah, it was definitely, there's definitely a lot to talk about. Before we dive into all of the things there are to talk about, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, and those are our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and I bet it can be hard work. But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. And I'll tell you, Rob, I hope Flag's got some homeowner's insurance on that casino, because it sure feels like there's a lot of property damage going on this week.
Are you covered against an act of God? I guess you are in a lot of instances.
I thought acts of God was like all you did with Geico.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I have it backwards. Jess, I forgot. I wanted to introduce you as the mother of dragons also.
Oh, yes, yes. Queen of the Andals, et cetera, et cetera. Man, that was maybe one of the best additions to the modernization of The Stand is the Game of Thrones shout out from Glenn Bateman, of all people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes sense.
I'm here for it. And I think the courtroom scene might be one of the only things that I'm a little bit high on.
Okay.
This episode.
Well, much like Glenn himself. I actually think the courtroom scene was an improvement of Glenn's death from the 94 version, because the Glenn, like, and I'm not sure exactly if it's the same thing where Lloyd is the person who kills him, but he just like is basically like ranting in a jail cell in the 94 version. Like, at least here, this happens like more in a public forum. And so that like the sort of like idea that he is spreading kind of like seeps into the population.
Yeah, I think it does close up a pretty good plot hole here, because he practically dies off camera in the 94 miniseries. And I think it's almost the same thing in the book, as I recall. But here, it's like everyone gets to hear what he has to say. And he gets that platform, mm-hmm. and you can see it kind of, you can see the idea sort of take hold. And not only that, but it does something to Lloyd, where I feel like Lloyd, you know, he was, we talked about how Lloyd was so much more capable in the hands of the actor who played him in the 94 miniseries. And here it's like, he could snap at any minute.
I hate He's this like, Lloyd so much. This is my least favorite thing about this 2020 version of The Stand is Lloyd is so terrible. Like, I have no idea what they're going for.
Yeah, there's like no reason for Lloyd to be there. Like, Flagg has no reason to have picked him, where he's like, I feel like the point of Lloyd in previous iterations of The Stand was that he just needed an opportunity. Like, it's very much of like, we're going to get to the heart of, you know, we're going to stop criminal activity at the heart of it by like giving opportunities to these people so they don't turn to crime. And it was like, yeah, you know, the second you give Lloyd real responsibilities, he's got a nice suit and he's flashy and he's making the trains run on time. And this Lloyd is just like, he's a hot mess no matter what.
Yeah.
Although they did do some things with him that finally made him a character I didn't fully loathe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot going on with Lloyd this episode. And it's like, why was nothing going on with you the first seven episodes?
They made him like into like some sort of like misguided like teenager who is sort of like his parents aren't around anymore and he's really like out of control. But Flagg is kind of like his dad and is going to get mad at him. And if he screws up, he's like, oh, man, hope dad doesn't find out what I did now. Oh, man. Just like he was like in a comedy. It was definitely a weird turn for this character.
It was, but at least it was interesting. At least it gave him some depth. Like he was like, he would not have been out of place on any of those MTV reality shows about partying.
Yeah.
You know, the ones.
The party
guy. Prior to this. Yeah. He's just like the good time party guy and he didn't actually do anything. Like we've had so many conversations about what does Lloyd do? And he just like brought up and he'd be
the
like,
spring
Woo!
Breaker. Yeah.
Yeah. But then there's a really interesting moment in the courtroom where Glenn is like, pontificating and he's making jokes about Flagg and he's saying like, why are you all so afraid of him? What is your deal with Flagg? And you see Lloyd drop the facade and become like a real guy for a second. And he sort of speaks for everybody. He speaks for the viewers here. And he's like, dude, he can fly. And he full on ate a dude last week. And this is like, I think this almost sounds like how you and I would have delivered that line. And it's really, it was really funny the way that he says this. And then once he does that, once he kind of becomes a real guy for a second, his whole character breaks open. You get this point where he was the second banana in the pre-pandemic times. Like he was just along for the ride and he has tried to project this bravado of I'm not anybody's second banana, but it's like, wait a second. Technically you are Flagg's. And so you're just the assistant to the regional manager, dude. You are. You know, you still don't have any leadership skills. And you see, like, the second that happens, like, the second he drops out of that, he never comes fully back into it. And I think that is so interesting. And it's like, I would have loved to see that struggle played out at any other point in this miniseries. Why are we getting it now, here, when we already hate him and we don't want to see him and we kind of cheer when he dies?
Yeah. That's a valid point. I do feel like that they really saved all of like the, you know, tide turning against Flagg and fit it all in one episode, which I think is also the shortest episode of the entire run, where I feel like even in the 94 miniseries, I feel like that there were like several beats to a couple of these stories, especially Nadine. Like, I think that like her turn against Flagg, I felt came like remarkably quick, and I don't even think I fully understand that I get, you know, why that she turns on him like so quickly to the point where she's ready to take her own life. And it's just like it's coming very quickly in this episode.
Yeah, and I think this kind of speaks to one of the things that they've gotten terribly wrong here. And Rob, we've talked about it, I think probably the last three episodes especially, we've been like, they've got extra hours. This is much longer than previous adaptations. And yet I don't feel like I know any of these people, and we've got so much action left to impart. What have they been doing all this time? It's like, I don't know these characters. They didn't really do anything. We cut out huge parts of the book that are very important to the heart of the story. And yet this is still much longer than the adaptation that at least tried to give you all of those moments.
Yeah.
And here they pay lip service to you. And there's points where they just tell you, they straight up tell you this is what happened. And I think maybe the most upsetting thing that has happened in this entire series. No, I'm not going to do it yet. I think we got to build to it.
Okay. Ooh.
We're going to get there because unlike the writers of The Stand, I understand building narrative tension. So I want to spend some more time on this courtroom scene and on specifically on the public's turn against Flag, because in the books, this is threaded throughout it from the beginning. And the people that come to Flag are really, you know, we've talked about how the Vegas society is kind of more like the everyday hardworking. It's the blue collar tribe, and they come in and they put in a good day's work, and then they work hard and play hard, and they're building something. They, you know, they punish people that transgress, and it's authoritarian, but it's also very efficient. And it's like, we got the authoritarian with no actual order.
Yeah, it was weird. I felt like that Flag was trying to, like, he had a big speech at the end of the episode, and I couldn't really follow how he was trying to tie it all together. He talked about how, like, you know, they say the apocalypse happened with Captain Trips. We said the apocalypse has been happening for years. And, like, he was trying to make it seem like that the people in Colorado, that's, like, the elite. And they're sort of like that they're tired of being stepped on by like the that one percenter Mother Abigail.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense because there's really the people, you have to start from the assumption that the people in there assume they are the good guys. And there's no way they can justify that. Like, I can get it in out in the real world. There, it's harder to say good guys and bad guys. And I think in the Stephen King Stand, it was harder to say good guys and bad guys. And you could make the case for we are real hardworking people trying to build a society here. And those people over there that feel superior to us, their smugness is the real threat. And I think Flag even like invents some ideas that people are going to come and kill them and take what's theirs. And, you know, taking what's theirs being a really easy way to make people feel like they're the good guys. Not saying that's ever something that happens in the real world. But here it's like, how could you look at these people? You know, he says, you know, you've lined this strip with crucified people that you've punished for things. Like, what did you punish them for? What is against the law in Flagland? You know, you have people fornicating in the elevators. You have people murdering each other in the death pits. You have, like, you walk down the strip and there's, like, a bunch of dudes beating up on a guy. Like, you're doing coke. You're,
I think they sent spies. Possibly? I think that they were guilty of sending the spies there.
But all the people that he punished previously, what does he punish them for? What could they have possibly done that was against law? I thought there were no laws. Like, what kind of anarchist are you, Flag? Are you the kind that lets everybody do whatever they want? Or are you the kind that punishes people for breaking your imaginary laws?
If you speak out against the anarchy, you're breaking the law.
I guess. I don't know. I feel like you can be an anarchist or you can be a fascist. You can't be both. You know, if you are anti-fascist, you are by definition not fascist. It makes me crazy. This is really not a well thought out universe. And when you start at the core of these people don't have any standing to believe they're the good guys. And if you ask them, they'd say, oh yeah, hell yeah, we're the bad guys. He's the bad guy. We're following the bad guy. You can't plausibly have them start to fall away from that. Like, I don't see these people. I don't see the point where they turned against him. And I think they tried to do that to their credit, but they didn't try to do it soon enough. And in the novel, you do have people showing up. Like, you have like all the law enforcement officials are drawn to Flag because of how orderly he wants it. And, you know, he doesn't let anybody drink anything stronger than beer. And he's really trying to, he gets the lights on faster than Boulder, not because he's Magic Flag, but because people work harder at it.
Yeah.
And you get to a point where all of a sudden people are like, wait a minute. I don't think he's the good guy. I think he's got something terrible planned. The way that he's punishing people, I'm not really on board with it. I've seen all these things along the road that make me start to feel like I don't belong here. And here it's just like somebody tells them they don't belong here. So they're like, oh, right, we don't belong here. Like all it took was for somebody to look at them and say, yeah, you guys don't belong here. Mm-hmm. And I hate that for it, but I like the set piece.
Of the big culmination?
Yeah, of the big culmination. It's an improvement on what he was trying, what he did before, where he's like going to draw and quarter them on the strip. Mm-hmm. Like this courtroom, this theatrical event, where they don't really understand how the courtroom works is very funny. Mm-hmm. And executing Glenn in front of everybody and having Lloyd be the one to do it and having him realize that he never was the cold-blooded murderer. I thought that was powerful too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the courtroom was definitely an interesting way to go with this. Like, I definitely think that there was some weirdness with like the big like public execution of Larry and Ray.
We'll get to that.
You know, this is supposed to be like the, you know, pleasure palace of whether, you know, we've got so much going on. A lot of people turned out for this kangaroo court.
Yeah. Can I also say, you can have a functioning community or a hedonistic wasteland. You can't have both, because how did they get a court stenographer? You cannot expect me to believe that they went to this woman and said, hey, can you come work in our hedonistic wasteland as a court stenographer? I know you were really good at that in the before times, and I assume that's the thing you most want to do in this place where people can do anything. How did they get a court stenographer? Mm-hmm. This makes no sense.
Who was the judge? Is that Rat Lady?
Yeah, that's Rat Lady.
Rat Lady had a huge episode. She was all over this episode 8.
Yeah, but they also did the thing where they never name her. She is never named at any point throughout this miniseries. You are supposed to just know that that's Rat Lady. She doesn't even have rats. How do you know that's Rat Lady?
Yeah.
You know, because you looked it up on IMDb and you know that there's a rat character.
Did she also yell at Tom in a couple episodes ago in Vegas? Was she the woman that came downstairs?
I think she was. And I didn't get that until tonight when you see her out of costume. It's like there's two different characters here.
Mm-hmm.
And it is extremely annoying that they don't establish any of that. And that it's like the woman with, as soon as she takes off the headdress, she looks like a completely different person. And you have to already know that that's who that actress is and that's what she's playing at to understand, A, that's Rat Lady. B, she's the same person you just saw. It's really sloppy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Rat Lady has a huge episode.
Yeah. I mean, Rat Lady may be the MVP of this episode. She's got a lot going on here. She's kind of suddenly the confidant to Lloyd, which they also didn't set up that relationship. So that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. He had been, what is the pink hair, woman?
Oh, that's Julie.
Julie. Yeah. I mean, that was his confidant.
Yeah, you can't confide in Julie about anything. Like, I think Lloyd is aware of that.
Yeah, she had a lot to do also.
Yeah, she was like pretending she was like a on the scene reporter.
Mm-hmm.
She was like playing at her Roger Clark there.
Yeah, she was like hosting the pregame show.
Yeah, and doing the red carpet interviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was like the Andrea Belke of the Flag universe.
Yeah. Anyway, that tracks with like the kind of person that you assume she was. She definitely has that real Instagram influencer,
yeah, she was an
energy.
Influencer.
Yeah. And I did like what they gave her to do, and also that they didn't just give her all of the confidant role. But I wish that we'd seen relationships between people developing in Vegas instead of the show just assuming, oh, we don't have relationships because we're a hedonistic wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of emblematic of the entire series. We didn't get any of these relationships developing. You know, like Mario told us last week, it's like, this is for people that read the books and they know those relationships exist. But I don't think that's a fair way to tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, we also, we get Ray, like, just losing her mind at watching Glenn die in front of her. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, she must really be connected to him. She must really like him. But we don't know that because I don't think they've ever had a conversation with each other.
They were walking on, just because we didn't see it, they walked for a long way.
They went hiking together. Hmm. Same thing, like Nadine and Larry carpooled together. Do they have a connection? I wouldn't know that until they talk to each other in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a scene that I feel like that should have some resonance. Like they should have that history between them, and they don't have it because we cut that all out for I don't even know what.
Yeah. Well, when you were talking about that, just a couple of things that where I think we probably spent too much time. Like this was like a big group project and now it's due and it's like, oh, we should have spent more time in a couple of areas. I do think that even though I really enjoyed the second episode all about Larry, like I think giving Larry a standalone episode, like I kind of feel like that his, and when we liked seeing Heather Graham, like I kind of feel like that I don't know if the payoff was there. I mean, ultimately, we got the culmination of Larry's story, and we like this Larry, but I kind of feel like if you would have, like, you know, cut that down by, like, 20, 25 minutes, would we have really lost anything?
Yeah, I feel like maybe what we need to do is, in the Larry episode, we need to spend a little bit of time on Rita, but then we need to bring Nadine into it.
Mm-hmm.
We need to contrast those two relationships that early.
Maybe 94 had it right of maybe you could have just combined Rita and Nadine.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I feel like it gives you a different Nadine. And I feel like Nadine doesn't feel to me as, you know, cosmopolitan. And it's a casting thing and the way that they're choosing to portray that character as somebody who's like a little more wholesome.
Yeah, he meets her in New York City. She doesn't have to have that same life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very, I think maybe that is something you cut. And I don't mind that they did it. I just think they needed to make it shorter. Like give half that episode to Nadine. Take half of it away from Rita and give the other half to Nadine.
Yeah.
Like kill Rita off in the first half of it and then have Larry be like wandering lost and have him connect with Nadine. Have them build that relationship. Have them make out a little bit.
Yeah. Because that's what they, in the 94 version, that, you know, there is like this, like incredible chemistry between Larry and Nadine. And she has to run away from him because she doesn't trust herself around him. And I thought that that was interesting where there was like never any romantic chemistry between Larry and Nadine in this series.
Yeah, they assume you know it because you know the story and you know that's going to, you know, that's going to pay off. And to that end, they're also, you know, they yada yada over all of that, but they did something interesting that I liked here. They attempted to close a plot hole because in the previous iterations of this story, you don't get Nadine having a really big inciting moment where she realizes she's made a terrible mistake. Mm-hmm. It's more like, you know, the terrible sex with Flag. And she's like, oh, wow, this guy's not as good in bed as I built him up to be. He's kind of scary, actually. Oh, maybe he's impregnated me with the spawn of Satan. This is bad. I'm going to jump out the window. And that all happens internally. And I think bringing her together with Larry and putting those two things together, this gives her one last look at what she's left behind. And it gives her a reason to doubt Flag. And they didn't nail the conversation. I don't see anything that happened in that conversation that should have pushed her in that direction. But that was a good idea.
It was a good idea. Yeah, I don't think they executed on that, though. Because then, you know, where... Is it Ray or is it, I guess it's Larry that's holding up like the tray that she should look at herself. And it's like, where they have no mirrors in, Flag's Vegas. Like she doesn't go in a bathroom and see what she looks like. Somehow in this like kind of like smudgy tray, she's like, oh wait, oh my God, that's what I look like now. But
well, we don't have any mirrors in the penthouse suite.
Yeah. She goes into labor then, off of that. And then, she's like really like upset, like something is wrong. Like, yeah, you got pregnant yesterday. You're carrying a full term demon baby that's pulsating. Yeah, something is wrong.
Yeah, that's problematic. And P.S., I hated the expedited pregnancy in that Next Generation episode with Deanna Troi. And I hate it here. This is a dumb idea. It's clearly written by people that have never been pregnant. And then it almost implies that you know, they say, she says something, Larry was right about you. And it's like, what did Larry say? What did Larry even tell you that makes you want to have this face turn at the last minute? Mm-hmm. It almost plays like going into labor and being in pain in labor makes her hate everything. And she's like, I'd rather throw myself out the window than push a baby out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I understand that sentiment, but this doesn't really, this yeah. has no place here. Yeah.
Well, could an epidural potentially have ended the world for the people in Boulder?
That's the thing. Like, they have access to every drug imaginable in Vegas. Somebody's got to have
Yeah, but you need
epidural.
An anesthesiologist, like, on standby to be able to set that up.
What, all the anesthesiologists went to Boulder?
I guess so. They ask that lady in the basement if they have one.
Yeah, I guess I don't want Rat Woman putting a needle in my spine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they have some interesting ideas about how to fix the plot holes, but they mm-hmm. also have no concept of what you need to keep.
But they had unlimited time. This episode was 48 minutes.
Yeah, like, we could have added like 12 more minutes where we even like attempted to explain what was supposed to be going on there.
That episode 2 that we're talking about was like an hour 10.
Yeah. Yeah. It does feel
You could
feel
have
a
used
lot.
The whole hour.
Yeah. It does feel a whole lot like, you know, we spent all that time perfecting the scene where Larry goes down into the sewers and fixing that plot hole in a masterful way. Oh, right. We got to do the actual stand. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I just wonder, like, from a production standpoint, like, you know, did they spend so much of their budget with, like, oh, we've got to show New York City post-apocalypse? And, that seemed like, again, like, for in terms of, like, the payoff, I know you want to have that, like, in the trailer and stuff like that, but I just kind of feel like that, I don't know if that was the best use of their resources.
Yeah, or they, you know, they spent their whole budget paying extras to walk around on the casino floor in bondage gear. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have room to finish out their shooting dates.
I had a very paradoxical thought as I was watching the episode today where, you know, everybody's in the courtroom and, you know, we're a year into this coronavirus pandemic. I'm like, oh, my God, all those people are there. Nobody's wearing a mask in there. And it's like, yeah, but they're on the other side of like this. But they've already had a virus that's taken out the whole world. But here I am. I'm like, oh boy, nobody's masking. Uh-oh. What's the people are like, I guess they've been through it.
Yeah, they have been through it. It is certainly, I think I've mentioned this on the air before, but I turned up a positive COVID test at the beginning of December and ended up being completely asymptomatic. And so for me, like having gone through that and been on the other side of it and having it not really affect me has been really extra weird to be watching The Stand at this point in time.
Yeah.
So I feel like I am one of those people. But yeah, it is, well, everything about Vegas is just crowds and people getting up in each other's face
Very
and like
dry, you know,
exchanging also. Droplets. Yeah. I don't love it. I would definitely not choose Vegas just on those grounds alone. I feel like they distance a little better in Boulder. Yeah. So should we talk a little bit about the scene where they bring dinner to Larry?
Yeah, that seemed just a little extra.
Yeah, I want to say at the moment where you're serving a head on a plate to your hostage, you should really be aware that you're the bad guys. And again, it's like they funneled all their budget into, ooh, let's get the practical effects guys to make a smashed head on a plate. That's going to be so cool. And then they forgot that they had to actually tell the story.
Yeah. Why? What does that mean for Larry?
Yeah, I mean, Larry's got to know that it's going to end that way. And I feel like it might even be better if you let Larry think that she's still alive and she gave birth to the demon spawn.
Yeah.
I think, isn't that going to make him more uncomfortable and make him feel more like, I feel like Nadine dying at this point is a win for Larry.
Yeah. Like, waste not, want not. I'm like, what are they going to like feed Larry like the demon baby? What are we doing with this? But Nadine's head. It's just like you're being a little mustache twirly at that point where you're, you know, putting the severed head on the platter.
Yeah, and honestly, you bring up a good point, Rob. The severed head on a platter is one of the less gross things you could be serving to him at this point in time. There's no demon fetus. That's a win for me.
Yeah, they didn't make him eat it or anything. They're just like, look at it, Larry.
And he's like, I believe I ordered the cheeseburger. Yeah. So we have a lot more to talk about. But before we do that, I think we want to take a moment and hear from some sponsors.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we're back. Okay. So we get then, we have had the trial, we've been convicted, and now apparently we are going to have this execution, and Rob, I have a lot of problems with this.
Okay. All right. You don't like a good public drowning?
Public drownings are so, like, I guess I want to say, like, it's kind of a letdown.
Yeah.
There's really, like, if you're going to kill somebody, I think they had it right before. Draw and quarter them. Like,
that's a good one. I mean, I think that if we're going to rank the, you know, top ways for like a public execution, I mean, I think the guillotine is like number one, right?
Yeah. Well, guillotine's up there for sure.
What about firing squad?
Firing squad, very, you know, there's, you got the boom, you got the blood. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, people were very, very excited and shocked about Glenn. Mm-hmm. I think firing squad is very, you know, it's a little more humane.
There's,
I think, blindfold, than Flag is going for.
Give them a cigarette. Like, I feel like there's something to it. It's a performance. Draw and quarter, that sounds messy.
Yeah, I mean, they're used to cleaning up mess here, but I feel like you can't do an execution as great as you want if you have been crucifying people along the strip and also having people kill each other with chainsaws in the swimming pool. I think most people would be upset. They'd be like, hey, where's our murder pit? Are you really going to fill up the pool now?
Yeah. A drowning is the dumbest public execution.
Yeah. Also, you can't even see what's going on in there. It's full of water.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big waste of water, no?
Yeah.
It's Vegas. It's the desert. It's, you know, there's not unlimited water to go.
I don't know. Your flag. He got unlimited power somehow.
Yeah. So, I thought that was a weird call to go to the, you know, we're now like, all right, everybody show up for the big public drowning.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's calling back to the Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
Question mark?
I don't know. But if you're going to do a public drowning, fill the pool up first and then, you know, tie them up with a brick and then throw them in the water.
Yeah.
Get in the empty pool and now we wait.
Yeah. And now they're sitting on the bottom of the pool and water's coming on top of them. And you can't even see what's going on anymore.
Yeah. But then we can interview them like as the pool is filling up.
Yeah. It's very dumb. They did have a execution by water on The Handmaid's Tale, and they made him like jump off a high dive. Mm. And that was very theatrical and great.
Yeah.
They knew how to do it.
Yeah. That's like a walk the plank. Okay, sure. There's something there.
Yeah.
It's visual.
Keel haul them. They got Treasure Island there. They're right in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of better ways to do this, even if you are committed to drowning them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then like Flag during this whole thing is very weird too, because he's dancing and it kind of feels like it's not really the effect he thinks it has. Like, he doesn't look sexy anymore.
You
he just
didn't
looks
like
cheesy.
The evil rave execution party?
I think I liked it for the other attendees. I didn't like it for Flag. It's not a good look.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got his loafers with no socks and he's like dancing around. Like, what happened to the boots? It's like this felt like they were trying to pay homage to something that they can't explicitly say what it is, but you know, your leader cheesy dancing and thinking he's awesome and not, and looking completely cheesy. They're calling out to something, but they can't say what it is, so it doesn't really come off. But you know, Flag's finally, he's having some losses, and I feel like we didn't seed it with the same losses that we've seen foreshadowed in the previous iterations. Like, you know, Flag should be in a much worse mood because he's been grooming this lady since she was 12 and she didn't come through for him and he doesn't have a backup plan.
Right. Right. And probably, you know, not a ton of other virgins made it to Vegas.
I think if you came into Vegas a virgin, you probably aren't one anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a problem. But then we have this sort of, oh, captain, my captain situation.
Yes.
Where Larry and Ray start screaming, I will fear no evil. And everybody around them is kind of like, huh, oh, wow, this is evil. We are the bad guys.
Yeah.
And there is one moment where they're kind of giving a nod to stand fans because you have this old guy. He's the first one to realize it and he yells back. That's right. I will fear no evil. And I think this man is supposed to be a character called Whitney Horgan. Do you remember this guy, Rob?
I remember this guy from the 94. Yes. He's like a character actor that's in a bunch of stuff.
He was Bernard from Lost in the 94 miniseries.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I feel like even like in, I feel like that he's like a 90s sitcom, like a staple, that guy.
Perfect Strangers.
Was he on Perfect Strangers?
He was like the boss on Perfect Strangers,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, because when I rewatched, I was like, oh, that guy.
Yeah. It's like, hey, it's that guy situation in the 94 miniseries. And it is meant to be like, here are the regular people that came to Vegas thinking like, this is just where society is. And they like, you know, it appeals to them that we're going to have like, this is the city of law and order. And Whitney Horgan is kind of one of the first people that starts to realize he backed the wrong horse. He is the one, like, you know, Larry and Ralph don't really have much to say in this scene. They're just like, yeah, hey, it's been fun. We had a good long walk. I'm glad I'm having this stand here with you. And they just sort of look at each other. And then Whitney Horgan comes out and he's the one that says, we have done some terrible things. This is all wrong. How can you keep backing Flag? And then Flag just like shoots out his Emperor Palpatine lightning and kills him.
Yeah. Doesn't have lightning in this one.
Yeah. I mean, there's lightning, but it's not coming from Flag.
Also, Whitney Horgan, Sam Anderson, also another one of his big roles is, I believe he is the principal in Forrest Gump that visits Mrs.
Gosh.
Gump. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That guy. Heavy breathing guy. I believe he went to Vegas. Yeah, but this guy, he's just like a random extra who's like getting his SAG card with his one line. And I think we are meant to understand, if we know the books, that that's Whitney Horgan. But
this is
how
not
are we
like
know?
What it said in the brochure.
I want my money back. Yeah, and then a couple of people start yelling out, I'll fear no evil. But this still doesn't feel like it gets enough traction before Hand of God shows up.
Before we talk to Hand of God, what do you think about like the big like televised concert atmosphere of like, all right, cut to the crowd, cut back the Flag. All right, let's cut like cut live to the drone shot following Trash Can Man. Okay, let's cut back to the people. All right, give me the people. Give me Larry in the pool.
Yeah, I mean, it tracks with what they're trying to do. None of it surprised me in the slightest, and it makes a little bit more sense than the more traditional gather everybody in the public square to witness the execution. I think this is maybe an improvement where it's like, yeah, come to the execution, but we'll also have snacks.
It was the Super Bowl of public executions.
Yes, exactly. Like, I think they understand that you can't just have the football game, you also need the halftime show.
Somebody was directing from out in the truck.
Yeah, it feels a little more fascist to say, okay, we're going to kill these people because they disagree with us and you all have to come and watch it. And everybody's just like standing around in the middle of the street. And like, what fun is that?
Yeah, they're there for the show.
Yeah, there's bloodlust, I guess, but they understand that there's more than just bloodlust, which is weird because we've talked previously about how they need to silo those casinos by interest.
Mm-hmm.
No, they got everything here. It's like, you know, Stefan's going to show up and be like, you know, they got the public executions, they got the rave music, they got the loafers without socks. New Vegas's hottest club is called Murder Pits.
We have been talking about the, like, what are they doing with Trash Can Man? In the 94 version of The Stand, Trash Can Man goes out on his own, goes and picks up the nuke to try to make Flag happy. Here, he gets that assignment from Flag, and then we find out in this episode that Trash Can Man is delivering the nuke to an airplane, and he will be, Flag himself will be flying the airplane to go drop the nuke over Boulder. Jess, did this plan work for you?
No. There's so many problems with this. And to illustrate for you exactly why I have so many problems with this, I'm going to need to call upon the 2004 film Walking Tall.
Okay.
The remake of the classic Joe Don Baker film starring The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a roommate then, back then, who we would just go to see, like, we'd, on the weekends, our fun was we would just look at what is the worst movie currently playing in theaters,
mm-hmm.
and we will go watch that movie. And one weekend, like, we saw it in Union Square in Manhattan on opening weekend, and there were like five people in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
It was 75 minutes long. And there
is that The Rock and Sean William Scott? Is that that one?
I think that's the one. It's based on a true story about a, you know, a local hero who moves back to his hometown and cleans up the criminal element by running for sheriff. And so there is a point, like, he moves back to town and he starts to be aware that, you know, there's so much organized crime in the city and the cops are all corrupt. And he's like, I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to run for sheriff. And the next scene is literally a car pulling up into the driveway of City Hall, and he gets out and somebody looks at him and says, so you won the election.
Hmm.
It's the worst storytelling I've ever seen. This is a real "so you won the election" moment to me.
Yes, and so it looks like that's The Rock along with Johnny Knoxville.
Oh, there, yeah.
Michael Bowen. That might be a different film with Sean William Scott and The Rock.
You know, Sean William Scott had a moment about the same time The Rock did. They all kind of blur together. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of movies with The Rock because mm-hmm. he was in a lot of bad movies. But
their careers have gone in different paths.
It is true. They have really, it's two roads diverging in a yellow wood. But yeah, this is what I'm talking about, where they didn't set that up. We even highlighted it when we saw it happen, when Flag was like, yeah, go get me the big fire. Flag didn't tell him at the time, bring it any one specific place. And we were like, oh, is he telling him to just bring it back to him? Isn't he supposed to bring mm-hmm. it somewhere else? And then he brings it to Flag instead.
Yeah.
And then they've retconned this, like, Trash Can Man shows up and Flag is like, no, I told you to bring it to the other place. And it's like, no, you didn't. We didn't mm-hmm. see that happen.
Yeah.
I was watching.
Yeah.
I saw that happen. So you were going to fly a plane? Like, when was somebody gonna tell us this?
Visiting him in his dreams? Like, you would think that they would give Trash Can Man, like, a radio just to sort of, like, say, like, hey, Trash, did you get that thing yet? Like, and are you going to be back at the runway by this? Because we are on a schedule. Could you just give us a ETA?
Yeah, or he can be like, yeah, hey, I found the thing. And they're like, oh, good. We got it all set up for you. We have the drop point. Please come and bring it to the plane. He's like, nah. And then he goes off on his own. It's just like, this comes out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And didn't they have, like, a drone shot, like, tracking him?
Yeah.
Like, Trash, we got you on the drone. You are not headed to the airport. You are headed in the wrong direction.
Yeah, Trash Can Man, you missed the turn. You got to mm-hmm. go back. Recalculating. Okay, go back to the airfield, man. This is not on the plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so badly executed. And there was just, they could have done it with, like, three lines of dialogue. Tops. They don't even have to shoot another scene. They could find a way to do it. They could do it in voiceover.
Yeah.
They could honestly, like, have the same shot of him, like, riding his little trike full of nukes. And, like, as he's riding in the sweeping shot across the desert, like, just have the voiceover. It's like somebody on a radio. Trash Can Man. Come in, Trash Can Man. You're supposed to go to the airfield. Trash, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And then have him pull up to Flag.
Yeah.
You don't have to have Flag say, you know, back, you remember that time back then when I told you to bring that nuke over there? Or have mm-hmm. him, here's a radical idea, have him say that up front.
Mm-hmm.
It's so bad. It's so upsetting how bad that is. And I can't believe that is in something that a major network is airing on its streaming platform.
Yeah, just why not send Trash Can Man to Boulder? There was no nuke that he could go dig up in the Denver area.
Well, there's also the fact that he's probably rendered it pretty useless at this point. You know, he didn't really take it out with surgical precision. He mm-hmm. sort of like ripped it open and it's leaking radiation all over the place. I really feel like it was better when it was encased in a package
mm-hmm.
and, you know, he could just like lift it up and put it on his little thing. But here, yeah, if he's going to be riding this like leaking radiation thing, maybe he wouldn't have made it.
Hmm.
Maybe that's the point. You know, it's a pretty long drive.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have made it at that point. And how's he going to refuel? He's not equipped to refuel.
Mm-hmm.
I think he walked all the way to Vegas, and that was before he had radiation sickness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Flag to me just throughout this entire episode, like just seems very like impotent in terms of like, that are we supposed to be afraid of him? Does he have infinite powers? Can he do all these things? Or like, it just feels like that at the time when he needs it most, he seems very powerless to stop anything that's happening.
Yeah. It's like all of a sudden his powers are useless.
Yeah. Like Nadine jumps out the window. He doesn't fly anymore. Like we saw him like a guy, like elevator doors closed. He appears like in the elevator. Like he couldn't like appear at the bottom of the fountain, catch Nadine.
God, that is a good point, Rob. I didn't even think of that. He can fly. Why does he care if somebody jumps out the window? He can just go get her.
Mm-hmm.
That is, now I'm, yeah. now I'm mad. I mean,
he
now
can
I'm
see,
actively
like,
angry.
Oh, I'm seeing spies, but like, oh, I cannot see Trash Can Man's position. He is not where he's supposed to be.
Yeah, I can pick someone out at age 12 to become my queen and groom her in her dreams for years and years, but I can't see that this dude I picked to run my empire is a total tool who's incapable of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's just a terrible judge of character. And I know that Lloyd was, according to this series, Lloyd was not his first choice. But, man.
Yeah.
It's really like selective use of power here.
Mm-hmm.
The Flag rules do not make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, but then, all right, Hand of God, Rob.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this treatment of the Hand of God? It is not the literal CGI Hand of God. It's something a little bit yeah. more metaphysical.
So I like this more than what they did in the 94 miniseries where, like, Mother Abigail's disembodied head is like, come on home, Larry.
Like, yes.
Like, I did not like that. Did not like that. I think they used like the Force Ghost of Mother Abigail a couple of times towards the end of the 94.
Mufasa.
Not great. Not great. I did not like that. I like this that it the hand of God was subtle here, and I think that that's probably a better call.
Yeah, it's definitely way less cheesy, and it felt like, you know, the whole universe was coming down together to take him out. But other than that, like, the mechanism was different. Mm-hmm. And I think the mechanism was visually much better. I frequently don't have problems with the visuals of this production. I mm-hmm. think they have in their head what they want it to look like. And it's really skillful at bringing those scenes to life. But it's like, maybe you would have been better to do a photo essay about the stand and let us project our own things onto it than try to film a whole miniseries.
It would have saved a lot of money.
Would have been cheaper.
Yeah. If they just storyboarded it. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have watched these storyboards. I would have watched the shit out of these storyboards.
Mm-hmm.
It's really...
They've done comics of the stand. Have you read those?
Yes, I have.
Yes, were they good?
They were all right.
Yeah. What was the biggest problem?
Yeah, I didn't love the art, but it was ambitious.
Yeah, so they should have had these guys do it.
Yeah, it should have been a collaboration. I think they really kind of screwed the pooch on this.
Kojak.
But they did make some very... They made some curious choices here. When you get struck by lightning in real life, you don't explode.
Well, this is special lightning.
I know, special lightning. But that was weird. But I think maybe this might be my favorite character death that I've seen in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those giant rings are falling out of the sky and mm-hmm. crushing people. And Lloyd sees one of these rings swinging toward him. And he ducks down and it goes over his head and he stands up and he's got this very self-satisfied look on his face. And then it comes swinging back because that's how pendulums work. And then it takes him out.
Yeah.
And it was.
It was good.
Yeah, it was emblematic of what Lloyd is. That's the kind of way that Lloyd should go out.
Do you feel like that Lloyd would have been spared the lightning because that he sort of like had a moment of redemption?
I don't think that's redemption. I think that's more like he understands how he screwed up. Mm-hmm. I don't think he did anything to make up for it. He's just like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, my bad. That was not good. Maybe he should have like given money to charity or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he doesn't get the direct lightning bolt.
Yeah. And it's not that he really thinks he's done wrong and it's in his heart that he has sinned. It's more like, I'm going to get in so much trouble with Flag for this. Mm-hmm. And also, I maybe should have picked somebody else to be my boss so I wouldn't be so afraid. I don't think it's like I should have done more to be nice to people because people have feelings.
Yeah. Lots of lightning bolts. I thought that the lightning was just going to come down and then like blow up the nuke. I was surprised to see so many lightning deaths pre-nuke.
Yeah, that seemed a little mean.
A little extra.
A little vindictive, if you ask me. Also, I was kind of surprised that, you know what happens when lightning strikes a body of water?
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking, too, of that for Larry and Ray, being in the pool during the lightning storm seemed like not the best place to be.
Yeah, you have to try not to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a very pretty moment, and again, and visually interesting, where the bomb goes off above them and they're under the water, like smiling at each other because this is the end for them. And you get like the crepuscular rays coming down in the water. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was pretty. It didn't make any sense, but it was pretty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So some interesting deaths here. And I did kind of feel like the lightning was being a little extra by choosing to take people out instead of just detonating the bomb.
Jess, what did you think of the Ray treatment here for episode 8?
I feel like episode 7 and 8 were just like the Ray show, and I want to see more. Like, why didn't Ray get a whole episode? She was great when we got to know her, but we didn't get anything about her prior to, like, she's snarky and she's fun to be around, and she's obviously, like, she's very deeply devoted to Mother Abigail and to her friends, but we don't know how they became friends. We never saw her interact with Mother Abigail. Mm-hmm. It's just, they should have taken this character and made her more prominent. Like, we should have gotten equal weight to all four of the standees.
Yeah.
And then all four of the standees plus Nick, we should have fleshed out all of their stories instead of doing whatever the hell we've been doing. I don't even really know.
Can I tell you another spot where I think we wasted some time, where there was the whole episode where this is the course of over two episodes. There was the one where the guy came and then this was the message from Flag, and there was a lot of like, what do we do? What do we tell people? Like, we saw like too much of the cabinet of the leadership. And then there was a whole other episode about like, okay, what do we say to everybody at the town council meeting before?
Yeah.
Like, we cut back and forth from the meeting to planning the meeting. That's when, you know, Harold like says he wants to keep everybody in toto, you know.
That meeting could have been an email.
Yeah. That was just like another spot where I think you easily had 25-30 minutes of time you could have picked up between all that stuff in Boulder.
Yeah, it's true. And that could have been given over to Ray's journey and her connection with Nick. And then we care about both Ray and Nick at that point, and we watch how they relate to Mother Abigail. Like, give us a scene with the three of them communicating with each other and like communing with Mother Abigail. And then we know all three of them better and we care about all three of them dying. Mm-hmm. And as it is, I kind of maybe care a little bit about Mother Abigail and not at all about the other two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also the whole storyline with the trucker that had like the set the trap. I don't think that really paid off anywhere.
Yeah. I feel like if you have a set piece involving a guy like kidnapping and raping people, maybe you don't need that.
Yeah.
Maybe you could find another way to tell that.
Mm-hmm. We could have skipped that.
Or you could have just explained that that was a thing that happened without showing it.
Mm-hmm.
There is a place where you can tell rather than show, like take that whole scene out and show us something that shows these people bonding.
Just a couple of spots that we could have tweaked. Like basically like that. We've got like a whole episode and a half back of time now.
We really do.
Mm-hmm.
I like this. I like this kind of excising pieces we don't like that drag too long and finding places to put other things in. This is good. This mm-hmm. is good. We could improve this.
Yeah.
See, Mario Lanza, there is room to improve on this adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
And there are easy ways that do not cost money or use technology we don't have yet.
Mm-hmm. So Flag ultimately gets lightninged AF.
Lightning to AF, and it's hard to tell. Again, we don't even need him to fall from grace, to be honest. Like, this is one of those things, like, the nuke was always going to happen, and people could still be cheering it on without feeling like they doubt him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they could just, like, stop, they could just not doubt him up until the point they get incinerated by lightning and or nuke. This really, like, it only really matters to, like, the two people that are there that incite it and witness it. But they're dead, so they can't mm-hmm. actually come back and tell anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, this is sort of, again, it goes back to Indiana Jones, like running across the Ark of the Covenant. And if you take him out of the story, everything happens exactly the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's always been a big issue that I've had with this of like, why did it take this for the hand of God to show up for like I think you said last time of like, well, they needed to all be in one place, but you know, everybody in Vegas is not going to make it. Like they could have all just still been in Vegas. Like, I think if you weren't actually at the event, I think you're yeah. still dead.
That's true. Like, I think maybe the borderline of the blast radius might be like right where Tom comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just on the side of it where he's not going to get killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he runs into Stu. Like, maybe that's why Stu breaks his leg where he does.
Mm-hmm. So, do you want to talk about Stu?
We can talk about Stu.
Yeah.
This is a weird... This was hard to watch, for one thing, because it was so dark. Like, okay. Literally dark.
Game of Thrones, storming yeah. of Winterfell type situation.
This was a real storming of Winterfell kind
of
scene.
Speaking of the Mother of Dragons, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, like, I thought my iPad had gone to sleep at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yes, yeah, Stu doesn't have a lot to do. Like, they sort of, like, there's, like, a wolf. Kojak fights the wolf. I thought that was going to be R.I.P. Kojak for a minute.
Mm. Yeah, no, but Kojak is a very good boy.
He's a good boy.
He talks Stu out of suicide.
Stu had a handful of pills, and then Kojak's like, all right, fine. You talked me into it.
Kill myself some other time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like Kojak had more to do previously. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does fight the wolves off. Good for him. He's mm-hmm. a very good boy. But I think he was like helping Stu eat because Stu's out there for a while. Like mm-hmm. he's bringing him water and like fetching rabbits.
Bringing him water? How's he doing that?
I don't remember exactly how he accomplished this. I think maybe he just like brings him. I know he like kills a rabbit for him at one point and brings it over.
I would like to know, like, how does Stu make these fires? Like, do you see Kojak just bring like a bunch of sticks to him?
Well, Stu's in an area where there's a lot of fire. I think he can kind of drag himself around on his butt. It probably hurts a lot,
mm-hmm.
but I think he's not completely rooted to one spot. I think he can get up and like get brush and mm-hmm. whatnot and enough kindling to start a fire.
Okay.
So I think logistically, I always thought it was weird that they just leave him in the desert and he doesn't run. You need a gallon of water a day in the desert, and I don't think he had that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially if Mother Abigail told him not to bring any canteens. That's a real problem.
Okay. Are you saying that Stu is drinking his own urine?
It's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised Stephen King doesn't go there with it, because Stephen King also wrote a short story about a doctor who ate his own hand.
Oh, yeah.
Usually one of my favorites, because it's always something I wondered about. I don't know what that says about me, Rob. I really don't. But yeah, we don't get a whole lot of Stu. And I was surprised because I assumed we were getting like all the way up to the end mm-hmm. in this episode. And I don't know why I assumed that, because it was 48 minutes long and we still crammed way too much into mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. Jess, do you expect a, like, I don't know if we know the runtime for next week's Coda episode. Like, do you think it could be like close to an hour, or do you think that this could be like maybe like a quickie, like 25 minutes?
Well, we still have a lot of, we have a lot to go. We have Franny's in labor. Mm-hmm. We have Tom and Stu. I think we must be, and in fact, I know we are going to have the scene. And again, like, I don't know why you care at this point, because we're so close to the end. It really doesn't matter, because the main thing has already happened. But this is a spoiler. You can skip ahead 30 seconds if you care. There's that iconic scene where Stu is sick and he is dying and he needs medication. And Tom Cullen has a dream where Nick comes to him and Nick can hear and speak. Mm-hmm. And Nick shows him where to get the medication that Stu needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the totally BS justifications that the production team on this series made for casting a non-deaf actor as a deaf character,
mm-hmm,
was that they needed to keep this scene in there,
mm-hmm,
which they really don't. There's a lot of ways they could do it. So I think we have to at least have the whole Stu's journey back to Boulder, where he and Tom stop off and, like, you know, Stu is having an infection and Tom is guided by Nick to find the right drugs to cure him. Mm-hmm. And then they make it back and they meet, you know, Stu meets his new child. And mm-hmm, then there's this whole Coda situation that seems to be taking from the books, kind of the extended version of the book where they raise a family together and then they get too claustrophobic in Boulder and they strike out on their own. I imagine that's what we're getting. And Stephen King has hinted that there's more to that. I don't think Stephen King comes on just to write 20 minutes is what I'm saying.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. What do you want to see next week, Rob?
I don't know. I don't know what else. Like, I kind of feel like that it's a situation where you're sort of like damned if you do, damned if you don't. I can't imagine like that he's going to have like an extended part of the story that people are going to say, bravo, you nailed it, stuck the landing. Like, everybody's gonna be like, hated it. And nobody's going to like what they ultimately end up adding to it.
Yeah, it's true. There's no pleasing anybody.
I mean, can you come up with anything?
I mean, to pull out of this tailspin at this point would be to bring something in that is especially for the deep book nerds, and anybody else is just going to hate it even more. And the book nerds are probably going to say he didn't do it justice. The one interesting idea was when I talked to Meg a couple of weeks ago, and mm-hmm, she suggested that because Flag is such a recurring character in Stephen King's books, and he's kind of like a binding element for a lot of the King universe, that the end of The Stand really should have been a way to bring that all together and to unite all of these disparate elements from the Dark Tower series and to show like the ultimate defeat of Flag and really actually obliterate him. Mm-hmm. And it does not seem that there's going to be any mention of the extended Stephen King / Randall Flag universe in this series, because I think the time to do it would have been here in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that's disappointing, because I think that was maybe the one really interesting thing. If Stephen King's revisiting the story, I think this is the one thing he'd want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel like this team with this much affection for the stories would have wanted to bring that in as well. The thing you have to remember is that when Stephen King started putting Flag in everything, that was after he wrote The Stand.
Yeah.
And after he had this idea of Flag as a character, and The Stand is such an iconic work, and he wrote it when he's like 30 years old, that I think he's always felt like he could go back and find ways to thread Flag from subsequent novels into it. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways he did with the unabridged version, but to not do that here, I think makes more sense. I think there's not a way, like, they didn't set it up. They didn't hint at it. Granted, there's a lot that they didn't set up and didn't hint at,
but
here.
Could they still do that?
I don't think they could. I would love to see it, but I think in order for me to enjoy seeing it, I would have had to see some of it here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my thought on it. I think we're going to get a pretty bog standard ending. I don't think we're going to get much to surprise us next time.
Yeah,
I think the one question, Rob, would be: did Flag survive that?
Yeah. I think we see Flag in episode 9.
Yeah, I agree. I think he does something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see some version of him. I mean, I just feel like we do not have that much to do here. Of that, like who is even back in Boulder that we Franny and
Franny and Joe. I guess Joe. Joe's probably going to have to move in with them because, you know, he doesn't have anybody anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect we get the joyful reunion.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to see a lot of Stu and Tom Cullen like on the road.
I mean, I think that's what we're going to get, Rob, unfortunately.
It's like, I get it. Like, okay, we got to get Stu better, but I really don't want to see a lot of bonding time just heading back to Boulder.
Yeah, I mean, this would be a curious time to finally start developing Tom Cullen as a character.
Yeah, that seems like that's not going to be super interesting. So I do wonder if it'll be like a shorter version of this, like, or if we end up doing like a time jump.
I think we do a time jump. I think the book does a time jump at this point, or the unabridged book does a time jump at this point. So, yeah, I think we get Stu coming back to Boulder. I think we get a time jump, and then I think the final scene is Flag, like, looking at the camera and winking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you disappointed that they didn't cut to, like, the button, like, one more time with, like, an unhappy face? Like, oh, I don't like this. Like, yeah, unhappy emoji.
I like that. I wish we'd gotten it. Or like the button like just turns into a poop emoji.
Yeah. Or he's just like making like when he's the seeing like the hand of God, it's just like making like the like a circle mouth.
Or it gets X's for eyes.
Yeah. Any of those things would have been interesting.
Yeah. I think I would have liked that. You know, if we're going to have an animated emoji button, I think it's got to have a wider range for sure.
Yeah. Or, like, do we see, like, Flag in, like, some sort of a different form that's not necessarily Sarsgaard playing Flag of, like, but, like, they still have, like, the button?
Yeah, it could be, like, somebody else. Like, who would you like to see as new Flag, Rob?
Maybe, like, a little girl.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see that. That'd be fun.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll see what happens next time on the Coda.
Yes, the Coda. So, Rob, is there anything else we need to bring up, or have we thoroughly obliterated this episode?
Yeah, I think we might have blown up. I thought that Lloyd was a little extra talking about Mother Abigail's bosom. I did not think he needed to slander our Queen Whoopi like that.
We don't need to sexualize Mother Abigail. Yeah, that's just not okay.
That was too much. But
that may be straight from the book, though, because I know Stephen King has a kind of a uncomfortable obsession with noting the size, shape, and appearance of every single female character's breasts. Oh,
okay.
It's not okay.
The 2003 Rock Sean William Scott movie was The Rundown.
Oh, okay. Sure. I think I did see that.
With also Rosario Dawson and Christopher Walken.
That's a stacked cast. Mm-hmm. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Walking Tall, I think, literally just has, like, Johnny Knoxville and The Rock.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else famous would touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to remake a Joe Don Baker movie, and I'm going to make it 70 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know why nobody was interested in that.
Yeah. But I think that's all I have through episode 8. Again, this was a interesting ride. It was, you know, like, okay, that's a curious take on that. And let's see how they close it out next week.
I mean, at least there were events in this. At least we understood what we were here for, which is not always true of this project.
Yeah. So, look, I thought that this, no matter, like, how it ends, like, that it was a big undertaking. I do feel like a little bit like lucky that I feel like that they've made this for a very small audience. Like, I feel like that this is not a mainstream show. I feel like they spent a lot of money on this, and I'm sort of like appreciative of, like, all right, well, thank you for, you know, the couple thousand people who wanted to see this. Thank you for putting all this work.
I mean, it's nice to be thought of, for sure. Even if it's, you know, if somebody brings you a really expensive gift and you maybe didn't need it and don't like it, you're still going to be grateful that they thought of you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, What do you think that the viewership numbers are on this? Are 100,000 people watching this?
That seems like a lot. I don't even know if 100,000, like, you know, that would be a significant portion of the CBS All Access audience, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. So what do you think? 50,000 people are listening to this?
I would.
It's like a podcast?
Yeah, it might be a podcast. honestly, Rob, if 50,000 people are watching it, like, that is a not insignificant number of them are also listening to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to see if there's anything about this on the on
I
the
don't
Google.
Think any of these streaming sites publish their viewership numbers.
Yeah, reception is basically Rotten Tomatoes gave it 59%, which seems high.
Mm-hmm. Does that give you a total number of raters?
49 reviews.
Yeah.
And Metacritic has 56 out of 100 based on 24 reviews. Mm-hmm. So I think we could extrapolate based on how many people reviewed it, I guess.
I mean, Mario had said last week, like, no, this is great. They made a show for people who love The Stand. But, like, I do not feel like that is, like, an infinite number of people.
It's sold 20 million copies, I think, something ridiculous like that. So It's not like you're playing to people who read books now.
Sure. I guess so. Sort of like when, you know, Survivor was on in the beginning versus now. But I still feel like that of the 20 million copies of the book that have been sold, how many of those people, like, you know, love the story to the point where they're ready to go back and get another adaptation?
I thought you were going to say how many of those copies were bought by Mario Lanza.
Yeah, giving them to every single person he met.
Yes.
So they throw it at him.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed talking with Mario about this last week. I really appreciated all of his takes on this. I didn't agree with all of them, but I feel like that's the thing about Mario is that he always has, like, an interesting angle on things.
Yeah, I loved it. It was really so much fun to break it down with somebody who has that deep knowledge, especially since we disagree on just about everything. And it's like, I forgot that it's fun to have conversations with people that disagree with you sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to thank him again for coming on. Mm-hmm. It was really great. Okay. So Rob, what else is going on with you?
Oh, just continuing on over on Rob's podcast. Watched the 36th best season of Survivor this week, The Edge of Extinction. So that was a lot of fun. We also got to play Twitch Ultimate Trivia once again over on the Survivor podcast. And just looking forward to next week getting the Tough as Nails crew back in the damn van next week for the return of Tough as Nails season 2. They could use a lot of those people out in Vegas, I feel like.
Yeah, I can't wait to get my hands dirty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with a real savage crew of people coming back to, or for the first time, playing Tough as Nails.
Yes, I'm really excited, Rob. It was one of the singular highlights of last year for me was covering that show that I thought was going to be totally nothing, ends up being like the blockbuster hit of the summer for many reasons.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see when we talk about the second season of, like, was there anything that, because we talked with the, you know, executive producer and then the director of the show, Phil Kogan, did, you know, was there anything that we talked about that ultimately, you know, ended up getting changed in season 2?
Yeah, I'm very curious.
In the unabridged season.
Yes, the unabridged season. I hope we have a chance to talk to Phil and find out what elements have been improved upon in this new edition.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. Good stuff.
All right.
All right. And over here on Post Show Recaps, we've got so much going on. It's really a jam-packed schedule. We are covering we got Avatar The Last Airbender rewatch. We've got WandaVision. We've got a replay of Final Fantasy VII. We have a rewatch of The X-Files. It's a melange of new and old here. And we are also putting out extra content in our patron-only feed. And so this is a good time to tell you guys that if you become a patron of Post Show Recaps, you have all sorts of perks that I think you don't even know you need, but you really do need them. We have at least three extra podcasts a week, including like movie viewing parties and reviews of television shows that we're not covering on the main channel. We have a lot of call-in shows, a lot of interaction between the hosts and the listeners. We also have a Discord channel, which is really, I think, the main selling point. At the $10 a month level, you get access to the Patreon Discord, which is this incredible, vibrant community of people playing the most absurd games with each other, just chatting about anything in particular. We have a channel for everything. Mm-hmm. And it has been just such a joy to get to know these people, some of whom are people that are I've known from the RHAP community, and some of them I really have not. And they've all come together, and I think we've really we're forging some great friendships. Yes. And having so much fun along the way. It really is worth checking out. So if you want to find out more about becoming a patron, you can go
and
to...
I will answer any stand feedback also.
Yes, Rob is actually sometimes going in the Discord. It's very exciting. Mm-hmm. You can go to postshowrecaps.com/patron or patreon.com/postshowrecaps. And that is where you find out more about that. And we would be really honored and excited to welcome you into the patron fold. And so I think that's about it, Rob. Thanks for coming on with me and breaking down all of this absurdity.
Yeah, Jess, thanks for another week of stand podcasting. I'm looking forward to bringing it home in the finale.
One more episode, Rob. We're in the home stretch.
Yeah.
And see the bright lights of Vegas.
Well, can I ask you, Jess, you're so much smarter than I am. If you were in Denver, Colorado, could you see a nuclear blast in Vegas?
Well, I think they're in Utah somewhere. I think canonically they're in Utah
Who's
somewhere.
Who's in Utah?
Stu and Tom.
I'm talking about
being in Boulder and being able to
I'm
see
talking
it.
About Franny and Joe at the end of the episode.
I thought they felt a disturbance in the force.
No, they said that they definitely saw the color of the sky was like a purple haze in the sky.
I believe it, Rob. I think you can see those kinds
from
of things
elevation,
from a long way off.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially from that elevation. I would have to do the science on it, but I do believe you would see something. And I think something they never got into was there fallout? Like, did people have to go inside and avoid like the rain for a little while?
Franny was like, we're going to get inside. It is 749 miles from Denver to Vegas.
Yeah, I would have to Google how far away can you see a nuclear blast, and then I'd get on a list somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, I feel like I'm worried about Stu and Tom.
Yeah, you would think, and I think part of the reason they have them be that far out is so that we don't have to contend with mm-hmm. that, but I don't know, man. All I know is that the blast radius between now and the next episode is about 1 week.
About 1 week. Okay.
So we'll see you then. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Bye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.